Welcome back to KPFK, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 in Santa Barbara. You're on Voices from the Front Lines. And that was, if people remember back in the day, that was Delight. The name of the song was, I had a dream I was falling through a hole in the ozone layer. And so that just leads very, very well into our next segment. And here's a reading off the website of the Black Mesa Water Coalition. It says, with every breath we take, 50 gallons of pristine groundwater has just been pumped from the dry lands of northeastern Arizona. On Black Mesa, the Hopi and the Navajo people, over 300 gallons of potential drinking water in the last 10 seconds have been just mixed with crushed coal. In the time it takes to read these few sentences, the Peabody Coal Company pumps over 1,000 gallons of its cleanest groundwater in North America, simply to transport coal. So today we are joined by Walia Johns, who is the director of the Black Mesa Water Coalition. She's from Forest Lake, which is on the Black Mesa Navajo Reservation, also called the Dene people, in northeastern Arizona. Her group is trying to address the use of groundwater by Peabody, the Department of Water and Power, and Southern California Edison. So all the folks that in Los Angeles, where you get your power from, this is where it comes from, and trying to address the use of water for coal slurring, and then also work on sustainable development issues. Walia, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you.
So why don't you start off with telling like the history of the Central Arizona Project, which I believe is the basis for all the other resource taking on the Black Mesa Reservation.
The Central Arizona Project?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, Black Mesa generates, you know, electricity for Mojave Generating Station, which electrifies the communities of California, Nevada, and parts of Arizona. And that's out of Black Mesa Mine. There's two mines up in Black Mesa. One is called Black Mesa Mine, and the other mine is called Kienta Mine. Kienta Mine also transports coal by railway to Page, Arizona, near Lake Powell, and that goes to a Navajo generating station. And it goes back, the history is long as far as Arizona politics and how this state was began electrifying their communities as far as Phoenix, Tucson, and northern Arizona. And it also plays in with California and Nevada and parts of Colorado of how are we going to electrify, you know, these western states. So CAP, the Central Arizona Project, is a divergence off the Colorado River that supplies water to Arizona residents, Phoenix residents and Tucson residents.
And so this is 300 miles of pipelines from the Colorado River, correct?
I'm sorry, I have to correct you. Okay. The CAP is California, or the CAP is Colorado. What is it? CAP. I just forgot the acronyms. But that's a different issue. This one is the Navajo Aquifer slurry line going from the Black Mesa region to Mojave Generating Station, which is in Laughlin, Nevada, 300 miles away. It's a pipeline that is of its own, and there is no other company or utility company that is using this kind of technology to transport coal for electricity.
And electricity is used to power the states that you basically just named.
Yeah, about 13 million tons of coal come from Black Mesa and is shipped out. About 6 million come from Black Mesa Mine, which is crushed with water and is sent 50% water, 50% coal through a small pipeline that goes 300 miles long and gets to Mojave Generating Station and is burned for electricity. So most of the water evaporates, as they tell us.
So, Walia, why don't you tell us about both sides of the argument, right? So there's what your campaign is trying to do, and then there's what Peabody, which also it seems like there are other forces that are aligned with that, even folks in your own government.
Yeah, well, we've been we formed within the past 2 years, us and some grassroots organizations from Diné, Hopi lands, trying to address the issue of our water usage by Peabody Coal Company and the amount of water that has been used within these 30 years when Peabody Coal Company signed a lease with our Navajo and Hopi nations to use our groundwater for transporting the coal. This water is called the Navajo Aquifer, and it's pristine, sole-source drinking water. It's one of the cleanest in North America, and we all depend on this water in the Black Mesa region. And it's ice age water. You don't have to add or take away anything from this water when it comes up from the springs or anything. It's really clean. So this is our concern that, you know, that Peabody's been using so much that it's drawn down our aquifer. And how we know that is that the pressure in the wells have dropped, and there's no pressure in some wells. And with the Hopi people and our people, we've been offering prayers and doing ceremonies for hundreds, thousands of years to these same springs, you know, that have always been there. And currently we're seeing that a lot of the springs are drying up. So, you know, right there, it hurts a lot of us when we can't practice something we've been, you know, fulfilling our communication to, you know, this land, this air, this whole universe, you know, is through those prayers.
Well, sometimes, you know, a lot of times in our communities we'll have different interests within there. And so I was reading some of the stuff on the website, and was saying how some of the people from the Hopi and the Navajo governments were actually in favor of this, and that you were trying to do something that was different, more sustainable. So can you say why they would be interested in this project?
Yeah, what we are asking for is that we transition to cleaner, renewable energy, transition to more healthier economy, because Navajo Nation, Hopi Nation are very dependent on Peabody and other oil corporations, gas corporations. You know, basically we're a fossil fuel-based economy, just like the U.S. We have this dependence on fossil fuels, and they're going to deplete one day, you know, and they're not going to be there, so it's best that we transition. And if there's available technologies out there, like clean, renewable technologies, we should take advantage of that. And California is a big part of this, this whole process of the coal being extracted from my backyard, supplying electricity for Los Angeles, for Las Vegas, and parts of Arizona.
That's a lot of electricity, Las Vegas.
Yeah, well, I was just looking at Los Angeles has a lot to do with this. The Los Angeles Department of Water and Power, you can definitely, you know, write them or call them and ask them to transition to more clean, renewable energy, and as well as Southern Cal Edison, which are owners of the Mojave Generating Station. So within our government structures, we've been trying to move in a voice, a grassroots voice of the people that live on the land, that are from there, that, you know, this future is going to be there, trying to tell them that we are the voice, you know. We speak for ourselves, that we, you know, have every right to speak on these issues, these matters pertaining to Peabody and their use of our coal and water. These lease agreements and negotiations were made, you know, over 30 years ago when there was no public input, you know, from our communities. And that was never given, you know, to us as an opportunity to talk about, you know, the fate of our future. So no one ever really asked us or included the people, the communities. And majority of the traditional people that still practice, you know, our traditional ways, the Hopi and Diné, we're in solidarity, you know, to protect and preserve, you know, our land, our way of life. We depend on the natural ecosystem for survival. And I mentioned earlier that we supply all this energy for Los Angeles and for Las Vegas, you know, and you go behind the hill, over the hill from Peabody's mining operations, and majority of the people do not have electricity nor running water, and that's a fact. And we don't have infrastructures there, you know. We don't see those benefits of those royalties at all. And so we can all testify to that. But more importantly, you know, I think we need to start as not just here in our lands, but all over, you know, our ways of living. We need to build more efficiently. We need to, you know, promote more cleaner technologies, because this is one world that we all live in. And, you know, it's not just my backyard, but there's so many phases through this fossil fuel industry cycle, you know, where people are being, their health and their environment's at risk. So, and then not only for the humans, but for all life, you know. And so we need to better take care of this holy and sacred, you know, place that the Creator has given us as people to take care of, you know.
Well, yeah, hi, this is Eric Mann. How are you? I'm one of the co-hosts of the show.
Hello, Yate.
How you doing?
Pretty good.
Winona LaDuc, who we also spoke with at the Boston Social Forum, recommended that we have your group on the show and spoke very highly of your work. You've raised three really interesting political issues, and I hope we can push you a little further on, you know, explaining to us what the struggle within the indigenous communities is like. The first thing you pointed out is, of course, that the leases are 30 years old. Now we're done under undemocratic means. Secondly, that even very frankly on a pure, are we getting our share of a bad ecological deal, that that the conditions on the reservations hasn't even, that Peabody is getting the best deal on a filthy ecological deal. And third, it's so painful that the most pure water in the, maybe the world or in the country, is being used to transport the filthiest form, the most polluting form, that is to say the pristine water from the aquifers, being the vehicle for the coal is almost too sick to think about, right? So if you have those three things, the core of the question I'm trying to understand better is, I'm sure you know or heard of that during the 60s, of course, the American Indian Movement and other, you know, left, revolutionary, progressive groups understood that they had to challenge the tribal leadership, that it was a direct struggle with the tribal leadership to build a movement. And I know you're trying now. Could you tell us a little bit more what it looks like? You know, what forms exist for those struggles? Are there public meetings, or do they even deny you the right to speak? When are the contracts up? Do you have a plan to try to terminate some of these contracts? Maybe you could share with us just some of the tactical planning that's going on in your head and maybe with some of your friends and co-workers down there.
Yeah, thank you for those questions. There's definitely movement building here. I can talk for Diné Lan, for the Navajo Nation grassroots people. We have an organization called Diné Biziu, which is a compromise of more than 23 grassroots groups that have been meeting, and we have meetings to try to strategize on different issues, whether it's education, government reform, environmental justice, social justice issues. Those are the things that we all kind of talk about before our tribal council meets. They meet like four or five times out of the year, and we have about 110 chapters, which are like 110 leaders in our whole nation. And so they're called chapter houses. So when we're going to address an issue, like say we took, for example, is our water, we took this issue to our local chapter and told them, hey, you know, let's get a resolution together to protect our water. Me and some relatives, we passed about 7 resolutions, chapter resolutions, and the next process is we have to take it to the larger council meeting, And they have to approve it or not approve it, you know. So it took us a year and a half to address this water issue. It was a completely grassroots effort. And, you know, we definitely, it was quite a challenge because there's always, we felt like the first year was really hard even for our voice to be heard and for this resolution to be acknowledged. But I think within the next few years we're going to be seeing some changes, and it's looking very positive. And many of the grassroots groups are, you know, thinking more about sustainable economy, sustainable, you know, agriculture, sustainable living. And, you know, the people that used to be former AIM members are part of this group too, you know. It's kind of like a big family, and we're doing it in a way that, you know, for our children and our, you know, our future. And you know, we're going to try to do it in a way that is in the most, I guess, peaceful and, you know, humble way to address all these important issues that haven't been talked about, you know, that have kind of been, you know, swept under the carpet, dealing with uranium, oil, you know, mining, under the table, you know, agreements with tribal governments and, you know, multinational corporations. So those are the kind of, I have hope. I mean, I really do have hope that our people are, you know, coming together and having meetings. And we're starting something, you know. Within our organization, we have many talents, you know. They're all young people from, like, high school all the way to, like, age 30, you know, and ranging between those ages.
Where do you fit in on that spectrum?
I'm more like, yeah, like.
I won't tell you how old I am, but go ahead.
Yeah, I'm. I don't want to tell my age. No.
Okay, that's fine. Let me ask you. We have 5 minutes.
Okay.
Well, yeah, and let me ask you 3 interrelated questions. It sounds very good. Mm-hmm. Are you part of the Indigenous Environmental Network nationally?
Oh my gosh, Indigenous Environmental Network. Tom Goldtooth, actually, he's the one that pulled us in, Black Mesa Water Coalition, into the network. And since then, we've supported one another's efforts, along with Honor the Earth and Winona LaDuke's group. So it's been a collaborative, you know, working group that we have established, and it's very powerful, especially the young and up-and-coming, you know, Indigenous leaders from all Indigenous communities of the world, too.
Well, that's good. Send my regards to Tom Goldtooth. We've worked together at the Strategy Center and IEN at the UN, at the World Summit on Sustainable Development. And it's good you need people like Tom and Winona LaDuke to, you know, who have that history. Next question in our last couple of seconds. It sounds like there's a growing number of women in the movement. Is that true in terms of women's leadership?
In the Indigenous movement, yeah, there is. I mean, there's always been. Where I come from, there's always been the Indigenous women have always been the forefront of a lot of movement, especially in Big Mountain, which is on Black Mesa. I don't know if you know about that issue, but it's about relocation, and definitely, like, all of my heroes or, I don't know, people I look up to have all been women who are my grandmothers, you know, who speak, you know, about the earth, who has that connection to the earth and to all that is living. So it's kind of innate in us as Indigenous women, so we understand the connectedness. And so I feel like there's a balance, you know, in men and women.
Good.
I think that's a good question. I wanted to mention, too, that people want to get more information.
Yes.
Go to our website, www.blackmesawatercoalition.org. And also there's a, you can also help us out. We're going to be posting it on our website that Peabody Coal Company is applying for a life of mine permit. Which means they're going to continue to mine for the next 30, 40 years of more lands using more water. So we're going to get something posted on the website so we can address this issue in opposition of this development.
Well, that last point was really essential, because the question is, in other words, one of the things you're asking is for people all over the country to try to block Peabody from getting either an extension or new contracts, right?
Mm-hmm. That's what exactly they're asking. But this is a life of mine permit, and the Office of Surface Mining has to approve it. So we have a public comment deadline September 15th, and we're trying to organize to get people aware, because a lot of people don't know, even in my community. You know, they Peabody prints it in a public notice in the local paper, but majority of the people don't speak, you know, or read English. And so how are they supposed to get this information and reviewing and public commenting on an 800-page document? You know, that's a lot of pages, and how do you, you know, try to public comment to that as you know, traditional elders and, you know, leaders out there? So they need to be more sensitive, you know, to who we are as people out there and our lifestyle.
So, well, Leah, within the last 15 seconds, why don't you give out your website one more time?
www.blackmesawatercoalition.org.
And is there something for folks in L.A. that you're going to put on the website?
What's that?
Are there things people in L.A. can do? We're coming out. Check out the website, and we'll stay in touch with you.
Okay. Sounds good. Yeah, you can email us, and we'll send you information.
Great. Well, Leah Johns, thanks for joining us today. Thanks for joining us this week. Today we had music from Freestyle Fellowship, D-Light, and DJ Chops. Please stay tuned for Beneath the Surface with Susie Wiseman. She'll be having speeches from Naomi Klein and ours very truly in our own Voices from the Frontline, Eric Mann. And Eric Mann will also be in studio taking calls. So please let us know what you think of the show. Comment at kpfk.org. We'd like to thank our producer, Alan Minsky, and our wonderful engineer, Maggie LaPique. See you next week.
You've been listening to Voices from the Frontline on listener-supported KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, and on the World Wide Web at kpfk.org, Pacifica Radio for the Progressive Community. Stay tuned for a special edition of Beneath the Surface with Susie Wiseman and Alan Minsky. It's coming up next, and also Eric Mann.